From WGBH in Boston, you're listening to Ground Truth, human stories from the front lines.
I'm Stephanie Daniel with the Ground Truth Project. This is the fifth and final episode of our series, The Fix, about New York's opioid crisis. We highly recommend listening to the series in order, so go back and do that if you haven't already. In New York City and beyond, the death toll from opioid overdose continues to rise. And now, New York's suburbs are in the deadly grip of the epidemic. On Long Island, deaths from opioid overdose are the fastest rising in the state. Here's reporter Joaquin Kotler.
Only 10 years ago, many Long Islanders viewed drug addiction as an urban problem, an issue for poor people of color, not white suburban kids. A decade later, that's all changed radically, and now more people are dying from opioid overdoses in Suffolk County than anywhere else in New York State. What's changed in the last 10 years? Doctors overprescribed painkillers, and the public embraced them, and shared them, and sold them, and overdose deaths in white middle-class America quadrupled.
My name is Michael Gippetti. So this is my story.
Mike Gippetti's story is a perfect example of the new opioid epidemic. Mike's a young professional, a 32-year-old lawyer from Oakdale in Suffolk County. In 2010, he had surgery for neck pain from a weightlifting injury, but it only made the pain worse. Mike sought help, and the doctor loaded him up with pills.
I went to the pharmacy with these two prescriptions, and then I walked out, 20 minutes later, it felt like, a bucket of painkillers and a bucket of Xanax.
Mike says he was taking home more than 250 pills a month.
And that went on for about 2.5 years. And that pretty much, solidified my addiction.
Mike's addiction took over his life. He lost his job as a Manhattan attorney, and his girlfriend left him. For years, he was in and out of rehab, but he always wound up where he started, still in pain and still dependent on pills. He finally moved in with his mother back on Long Island. The only thing he had left in the world was his Snow Lynx Bengal cat, Marshall.
Squeak.
He squeaks, he makes all weird noises.
Mike was still unable to find a doctor who could treat both his neck pain and his addiction.
The second you even mention that you need help getting off of a drug you're addicted to, they would just say, sorry, we can't help you.
We don't feel that this is something that we're comfortable talking about.
That's Dr. Sandeep Kapoor, who works with Northwell Health, New York's largest healthcare system. He says that even for doctors, addiction can be a taboo subject.
And why is that? Because we have very little training.
Dr. Kapoor specializes in training healthcare providers to treat substance abuse. And he says when he was in medical school, he received fewer than 4 hours of addiction training.
I can't emphasize enough how many medical schools throughout the country don't really have a curriculum when it comes down to addictions.
He wants to make addiction something people aren't afraid to talk about.
We're trying to normalize the conversation. Just like we're going to take your blood pressure, we're also going to ask you about your substance use. Just understanding a patient's substance use status opens up the gateway to so many other things downstream. Identification, some sort of intervention, potentially treatment, potentially following up with those patients.
Implementing this process requires hours of training for every single person interacting with patients. Training and a little bit of acting.
Come on in, my name is Janelle. I'm gonna be asking you several questions along with taking your vitals. Is that okay?
Sure, why not?
Okay, so during the past year, how often have you used tobacco products?
Why are you asking me these questions?
This conversation is taking place at Northwell's Division of General Internal Medicine in Nassau County on Long Island. It's part of SBIRT training. That tortured acronym stands for Screening, Brief Intervention, and Referral to Treatment. SBIRT is not new. In fact, doctors nationwide began using it in the 80s to treat alcoholism. Now, Northwell hopes it will work for opioid addiction. At today's training, medical assistants practice asking a specific set of questions while their colleagues pretend to be patients.
How often have you had 6 or more drinks in one occasion?
Linda DeMazie is a health coach, kind of like a combination nurse and social worker.
we're seeing more and more patients with an opioid problem here at internal medicine. I would like to think that Esperd has something to do with it, that when they are visiting their primary care physician, they're comfortable to speak about it and be honest about their pills and painkillers and about their drug use.
Through this screening process, Northwell has identified more than 3,000 patients who need treatment. It's not a cure-all. Esperd is only effective if a patient is forthcoming. Still, Northwell hopes to roll it out in all of its doctor's offices. To do this, Dr. Sandeep Kapoor and his team are looking to the future.
One of our strategies was, let's better equip our students so that they can take it throughout their career because it's an important part of their clinical arsenal.
If you wouldn't mind, I'm going to ask you a few questions that we ask all of our patients.
This is a training session for first-year medical students at Hofstra Northwell School of Medicine on Long Island. Here, a paid actress pretends to be visiting her doctor.
These questions, they really seem ridiculous.
The med students play the clinicians.
I understand that a lot of these questions are sensitive and may make you feel uncomfortable.
Dr. Kapoor runs these trainings.
Wonderful, that's great. Would anybody else do it differently? Would we reframe any of that or add to it?
Beginning in 2013, he helped launch a major overhaul of the Hofstra Northwell curriculum. He hopes this will help create a new generation of addiction-savvy doctors.
They're going to hit every discipline of medicine. They're going to hit health systems throughout this country. They're the folks that truly can make a long-term impact.
Most medical students in this country receive only 1 hour of addiction training in all 4 years of medical school. As part of the new curriculum, every student receives at least 12 hours of addiction education. Dennis Kesselman is a second-year medical student at Hofstra. He's planning to go into primary care.
If an addiction issue comes up, I feel fairly confident in talking to the patient about it. You do what you're comfortable with. You do what you have experience with.
Okay, and your name is spelled G-I-P-P-E-T.
Consider Mike Gepetti again. He's the lawyer from Suffolk County we heard from earlier. He says over the years he struggled with his addiction. When he tried to get help with his neck pain, not one of his doctors asked him about possible substance abuse. Had they done so, he believes he would have gotten the help he needed a lot sooner.
So you're all set with Dr. Gaylor?
Okay, thank you so much.
Mike's been sober for a year and a half, thanks largely to his psychiatrist, Dr. Robert Gaylick, a 30-year veteran of addiction medicine. Mike meets with him every 6 weeks or so at his office.
Try to make the other changes first, and we can take a look at it.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay.
Thanks.
Like other providers at Northwell, Dr. Gaylick is attempting to lower the number of opiates prescribed to patients.
I will try talking to the person who is writing the opiates, and I'll communicate with their primary care physician, their orthopedist, their pain management person, saying, this is what I see going on. Do you think there's an alternative approach we can try?
Gaylick is part of a team of therapists, counselors, and primary care providers who work together to treat addiction. Northwell plans to expand this team-based approach to all of its 21 hospitals. They're also monitoring opioid prescribing among their doctors while helping them explore alternative ways to treat pain. Mike Gepetti says he's benefiting from this approach.
I've been looking for other outlets, you know. I'll do some yoga in my bedroom, you know, some poses, try to meditate a little bit. You know, just relax my mind, try not to obsess over the last 5 years so much.
Mike considers himself fortunate. Although he struggled for years, he found help before he was tempted to try heroin. But his best friend wasn't so lucky.
Yes, my best friend Jamie passed away September 2015. He did heroin, and it was laced with fentanyl, and it killed him, and he's gone.
Mike had no idea his friend was using heroin, because Jamie never told anyone.
I knew he was struggling with pills. That's something we discussed, and we were trying to help each other throughout our addictions, but I did not realize he was doing heroin over all the years that he was using.
But Mike told the people close to him about his own addiction.
I told my family, no problem. I told them the first time I got addicted to Vicodin, like first time I detoxed, the first 3 months I got addicted, I told my family. It was scary.
This is the first time Mike has talked about this publicly. He's speaking up because he believes that shame and stigma killed his friend.
I wish he spoke up. I wish I told his family, to be honest. You know, I wish I would have said, listen, your son's struggling with addiction. He needs help. You know, his family probably would have spent every dollar they had to make sure what happened didn't happen. I would say, if you know anybody struggling with addiction, just help them. Whether you want to talk to their family about it or help them find a doctor, just do everything you can to try to cut it off as early as possible before it gets really, really bad. Just don't judge people, and if you can, just, you know, try to help an addict.
In New York City, more than 1,000 people died of an opioid overdose in 2016, making it the most fatal year on record. And the death toll from heroin and other opioids continues to rise. By the end of this year, a record number of people across the country are expected to die. But still, if there's one silver lining to this opioid epidemic, it's this. A lot of the people we spoke to say it sparked a national conversation about addiction. A conversation that's long overdue. And the stigma of addiction, they say, is slowly dissolving. This is the last episode of our series, The Fix.
From the Ground Truth Project, which supports
the next generation of reporters
to tell the most pressing
stories of our time. Thanks for listening.
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 This episode of Ground Truth was reported by Joaquin Kotler. It was edited and produced by Rachel Gottbaum and Isaac Kestenbaum. Joaquin Kotler also composed the score, along with Seth L. Johnson. This is the final part of our series, The Fix, but the Ground Truth podcast will be back soon. Ground Truth's managing editor is Rachel Rohr. Denise Legresci is our fellowships manager. I'm Charles Sennett, Ground Truth's executive producer. Special thanks to Phil Rado and Bob Kempf at WGBH, and to Nathan Toby and Rob Rosenthal. Thanks as well to City University of New York's Graduate School of Journalism, Argo Studios, and Gilded Audio. Funding for this project comes from the Northwell Foundation, which supports research and training for a new generation of healthcare leaders. Additional funding was provided by the MacArthur Foundation and the Baik Family Trust.